Good morning and welcome to episode 36 of our monthly Meet the Experts Q&A session with Cinten's employment team. Catherine, Ange and I have just been talking just before we came live here about being episode 36, and we're just really trying to figure out where the months and in fact actually the years have gone since we started this podcast series, webinar series in April 2020. So on that note, just want to thank you once again for your continued positive comments about these sessions, for continuing to sign up for them, for tuning in each month. We have a record number of people signed up this morning, which slightly intimidating for us speakers, but just absolutely amazing in terms of the amount of people still tuning in and it growing each month. So thank you for that. Thank you for continuing to send in your questions. We couldn't do it if you didn't send in the things that you wanted to hear from us about, and for watching the video and listen to the podcast afterwards. So while these continue to add value to you, we all continue to do them. So thank you once again. Okay, so just moving my slides on, just to show you our speakers this morning. As I've said, our speakers are associates Catherine Hope and Angela Carver from our employment team. And as with all our previous sessions, we're going to be dealing with three of the questions that you've sent in. So enough from me. Catherine's going to do question number one, question number three. Ange is going to deal with question two. Catherine, good morning and over to you.
Good morning. Thanks, David. Good morning, everyone. So yes, the first of our three questions this morning is, how do you deal with a disciplinary matter whilst an employee is on maternity leave? I think the first thing to just confirm and be clear on is the fact that someone's on maternity leave, or indeed any other type of family parental leave, is not a block in itself to investigating a disciplinary issue that comes to your attention, or indeed, you know, taking disciplinary action if that's then appropriate once you've carried out an investigation. What you need to really think about here is it's how and why you take such action that could cause issue and put you into difficulty. I guess just as a starting point for someone who is on, for example, particularly maternity leave, which this question is about, nothing at all should be done in relation to the first 2 weeks of obviously that compulsory 2 weeks of ordinary maternity leave. And I guess I'll come on to it later on, but also just in that early period of ordinary maternity leave anyway, it's really important to think about when it's appropriate to raise any issues if you think you need to. I'll come on to timing a bit later on. The main thing here is to really ensure that you and your managers who may be dealing with these particular matters do not do anything that could be discriminatory because of someone's pregnancy or the fact that they are taking their maternity leave. So if you're in a position where something does come up and it comes to your attention, it's then just about following your normal procedure, following that correctly, and documenting the reasons for that and why you think it's appropriate to take a certain action. And that will put you in a good position to defend any allegation that anything you do is related to someone's pregnancy or the maternity leave. I think you could really be in difficulty, for example, if it was something that you were aware of before someone's got on leave, you know, in good time before them going on leave, but you've not actually decided to take any action until they've gone on maternity leave. Those are the kind of situations where you could come into difficulty because there's questions around, well, why are you doing it now? And why did you wait? Or particular things that you've left to deal with when someone's then off. So it's carrying out that thorough and proper investigation, documenting that. But whilst you're doing that, you also need to take into account the fact that someone is outside of the organisation. They're absent. They're not there day to day as someone might be if they're, you know, physically present at work. So you need to be mindful and make sure they're not then also disadvantaged because of that. So you need to really accommodate the fact that they're on maternity leave. And when I say that, I mean, you need to think about how you're communicating with them. Now, you will ordinarily ahead of someone going off on leave, you should have discussed with them what their, you know, preferred method of communication would be whilst they're on maternity leave, so separate to this. So respect that, but I think you also need to be aware that someone's preferred method of communication may well change when it's to do with a disciplinary investigation and or disciplinary proceedings, as opposed to just the communication they wanted whilst they're on maternity leave. So they may well want to change that, and it's checking and making sure that you know how they want to communicate with you. Giving them plenty of notice for any meetings, any conversations, and giving them enough time and a good amount of time to respond, taking note of, you know, the situation they're in, particularly in the early, and certainly when someone's on ordinary maternity leave. Timing, I just touched upon that earlier, obviously from a health and safety perspective and the compulsory 2 week period, which I don't think that needs to be said anyway, but it's just mindful if something comes up that you think needs to be dealt with quickly, also just bearing in mind the appropriateness in terms of timing of contacting the employee when they remain on ordinary maternity leave, just in terms of those early days after that 2 week period. Meetings and hearings. Obviously someone who's absent from the workplace can't be forced to attend a meeting. But there's nothing stopping you suggesting that if indeed you think it's appropriate, given the information that's come to light and it's not something that can wait. It may well be that you come across things that actually can wait and it's deemed more appropriate given the circumstances to do so. Remember, you always have to think, is something to do with conduct or performance? And in light of whether or not it is either of those, whether it's appropriate or it is something that can wait. Of course, there'll be situations where it is something that needs to be dealt with before someone comes back from maternity leave, and this is this kind of situation. So looking at alternatives to offering to come out to see them at an alternative location to the workforce, or indeed coming to their home if that's something they want to do. Being flexible probably in terms of whether they can have a companion there and who that can be, because obviously the normal position is that it would be a colleague or a trade union representative, but it's this kind of situation where it might be more appropriate to be flexible. But also it's options where an employee could use a kit keeping in touch day where they are paid for attendance when they're attending a particular meeting or an investigatory meeting. So it's having those conversations. Again, they would have to agree to that and to that attendance. It's also important, obviously, and this is a worst case scenario, and it's thankfully very rare, in that if then there are disciplinary proceedings that lead to someone's dismissal, they will then, obviously, if they were entitled to statutory maternity pay, they would remain entitled to that for that 39 week period, and also to the statutory maternity leave, which is the 52 week period. But just in terms of making them aware of their entitlement to pay that you'll still need to cover. Just in terms of, on a final note, other matters to be aware of, just things that could come up due to the situation when you're meeting with staff or trying to communicate with them, is staff who may be dealing with postnatal depression. It's just being aware of things that could come up and that someone is dealing with during their maternity leave. So that's just some things to consider. So I'll pass you over to you, Angela, to deal with the second question.
Thanks, Catherine. The question that I've got to have a look at today is handling complaints from female staff members about inappropriate behaviours from male staff members. So really, this is quite a wide topic, both in terms of what to do to address concerns and also future-proofing to ensure concerns don't come up again. Now, on the basis of the question, I'm not sure if it's a grievance that's been raised, a complaint, or somebody passing a comment. That being said, it appears that this concern surrounds the workplace environment rather than harassment directed towards a specific individual. In any event, if an environment makes somebody feel unsafe, an employer should take steps to understand the allegations and sensitively and swiftly before things escalate. So the initial questions that come to mind are whether or not the male staff members are speaking about the female sex in a derogatory way, whether or not conversations directed towards a specific individual, if it's vulgar language, perhaps on a factory floor, or if it's innuendo, which it has been taken in a certain way. So I would address any complaints or concerns in the same way, whether a grievance has been submitted or not. That being, the first thing to do is to hold a fact-finding session or meeting, however you want to define it. And that's where you seek to understand what's happened, when, by who, and if there's any documents or CCTV that the employee wants you to check out. It could be that they've got emails where there's been some inappropriate jokes, for example, sent around. It could be that there's what we call banter happening in the break room. We just need to understand more about it. What I would also suggest is, in a grievance situation, you're not entitled to a companion, but if somebody's making a complaint about potential harassment in the workplace, it would make them feel more comfortable having a companion. I would absolutely permit this. So the next stage really for you is when you've established the basis for the concerns, then you can deal with it. I will say that sometimes, but not always, individuals don't appreciate the impact of their actions. This is both unfortunate when it comes to harassment, because it's not the intent that's important, it's actually the impact that it has on the individual, which harms your claim. So just because somebody says, oh, well, I hadn't meant to offend Sharon, it doesn't really matter, because if Sharon is offended, that potentially is a claim for harassment. You also need to take a view as to whether or not you need to investigate matters further after you've spoken to the individual as well. It could be that you actually have a systemic issue in your business, and you need to gauge whether or not the behaviours have impacted on other members of staff as well. So if individuals are named, it might be appropriate to meet with them. If there are other individuals who they say, oh, you know, so-and-so says she was also impacted by X, it might be appropriate to speak to them too. But I will say, in terms of harassment, this is covered under Section 26 of the Equality Act. And if any behaviour causes an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating or offensive environment, this could result in a claim for you. So you do need to take complaints very seriously. Now, as we go through an investigation, there is really a fine line that needs to be drawn between the need to carry out an investigation and also the rights of the employee being investigated. So you need to have regard to your implied duty of trust and confidence, which is owed to every employee, whilst balancing the duty owed to the employee who's raised a grievance, particularly, I would say, to reassure them that the grievance is being dealt with promptly and properly. As an employer, you will find this is quite a difficult balance to strike sometimes, and it will largely be dependent on specific circumstances. So it's important to keep the employee who made the complaint or grievance updated, but also to make all employees feel as if they're supported and being taken seriously. If your individual who has made the grievance or complaint does not feel supported, that could lead to them resigning in breach of contract and claiming constructive unfair dismissal. So you do need to handle matters sensitively. When it comes to an outcome, in most cases, it is appropriate to let the employee who raised the grievance or complaints know that appropriate action will be taken. However, the outcome of the further action, such as a disciplinary sanction or a quality training, must be kept confidential. As an employer, the other things to check are policies and whether or not these are up to date and relevant, and training. Now, training is a big one. And if anybody's attended our seminars, we spoke about the case of Ali and Gellin, and that talks about the fact that meaningful training needs to be in place. It's not just a tick box exercise. And I would say in a situation where you're having complaints about behaviours of male staff, which potentially could border on harassment, training perhaps needs to be refreshed in that situation. There's also a study that was undertaken by the Fawcett Society, and that talks about sexual harassment in the workplace. And that's quite an interesting read and does give some really good pointers for employers as to how to minimise the impact in the workplace. So in summary, investigate, act upon the detail, keep the employees informed about your inquiries and put in place remedial action. OK, I'll pass you back over to Catherine for the third and final question. Thank you.
Thanks, Angela. That was some really interesting stuff there. We get quite a few questions about that recently, so it's a good one to come in. Our final question today is, can you recruit after redundancy? And if so, when? It's interesting. This is often one that can lead to someone, whether they have merit or not, to bring a claim if they've recently made redundant. And we do come across this a lot if we're responding to claims of unfair dismissal where redundancy is involved. So it's a good one to come in to consider. From a genuine position is there's no set period for which you cannot recruit after redundancy. What you need to be mindful of, though, is if it's something you are considering or that you do, it could compromise the fairness of a dismissal on the grounds of redundancies that you've done if someone has that requisite 2 years to bring an unfair dismissal claim. So it's really going to be fact specific and if you know why you're doing that and the reasoning behind that. So I'm just going to look at the kind of things that an employee could raise if it's something that you're considering. First things first, you need to think about, was there a genuine redundancy? If you're in a situation where you're recruiting straight away for exactly the same role shortly after that position has been made redundant, there's going to be a strong argument to say, well, was there a real genuine redundancy at that time? And was my dismissal fair? I'd expect an employee to come forward with an argument to say you can't then rely on that reason as a fair reason for their dismissal. I'll come on to obviously situations where, you know, things could have genuinely changed, but that's just the main thing. You really need to be careful that the reason for someone's dismissal was redundancy at the time of dismissal, and it's not then a cover for something else. Recruitment freeze. An employee could also argue that, yes, there might have been a genuine redundancy situation, but you've compromised the fairness of the dismissal by failing to consider alternatives such as a recruitment freeze. It's important to note when you're looking at a fair dismissal in the area of redundancy, a dismissal is more likely to be fair if you've fully considered alternatives, and it's certainly something you need to consult with employees about during a fair consultation process. So if it's something you've not considered, an employment tribunal would likely question that if you've not put your mind to it. You know, the kind of things you would expect employers to look at, for example, could be reducing headcount, recruitment freezes, looking for people coming forward with voluntary redundancy, looking at alternative vacancies, things like that. And it's certainly something you should show that you've looked at during the consultation process. So someone could raise that and say that you've not fully considered it as an option. Another thing that could be raised is if it's a, say, it's a similar role and it's something you should have actually, if that vacancy was there prior to someone being made redundant, that you should have offered them that as an alternative vacancy during the consultation process. Because if you fail to carry out that search, it's something you need to do as part of a fair process. If you fail to do that, that could lead to a dismissal having been unfair. And if it's something that you should have offered them, then you could come into difficulty. Obviously, that is going to depend on the nature of the role, whether it's the same or similar. So again, this is all going to be obviously fact specific and is on a case by case basis. What I would say is there are genuine situations where you may have had a genuine redundancy, you followed a fair procedure, someone's employment has been terminated on the grounds of redundancy, and then very shortly after, you know, it could be very quickly, suddenly there's an unexpected upturn in work, you've won a new contract, new business has come through, or someone's resigned, which has led to a vacancy, and you need to recruit. That's obviously a clear situation where the situation has changed. Remember, it's all about what the position was at the time of dismissal. Was that a genuine, was the reason at that point genuinely redundancy and was a fair process carried out? So if you're in that situation, you're not expected to then offer the person who's made redundant that role because their employment has already been terminated and the position has changed after that point. So that in that situation, yes, you may still get someone, you know, get that person, they may well be in touch and may well still bring a claim even if there's no merit, but you should be able to comfortably defend that. But it's all about you then being able to document and have evidence of how the situation has changed to be able to defend your position. So that's the end of our questions today. Thank you for joining us and I'll pass you back to David.
Thanks very much. Enjoyed listening to all of those. Very quickly for me, just a reminder that we're continuing to work hard to produce and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, blogs, podcasts, videos, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And obviously that includes all episodes of this Q&A session. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at SintonsHR. Moving the slide back on to our speakers' details, if you would like to discuss or raise anything the guys have spoken about today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them or a member of the team. As I said, details are there on the screen in front of you for Catherine and Angela. Our next session will be with you Friday the 30th of September, 10 a.m, live on Teams as normal. And as usual, I'll send a link round to you nearer the time. All that's left for us is thank you once again for listening. Stay safe, everyone. Have a great bank holiday weekend, and we'll speak to you in September. Thank you.